Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Ask Coach Mac, episode number 64. Out on a little hike with James. Say hi, James.
What's up, guys?
And the dogs. Doc Dolly, come here. A couple Dobermans. Big part of our family. We're on this cool trail near our house. Right off the lake here. Probably hear some of the boats in the background. And just wanted to bring, just answer a couple quick questions while I had you guys. Always want to thank our sponsors, Sornex, Samson, Train Heroic, Woodway, Iron Grip, Intech, Gymaware, and Versapulley. Just appreciate them for helping us to continue to bring a great message to everyone. I want to jump right into this. First, Rich, he asked, how do you handle criticism from a football staff? And I think, Rich, I think the number one thing is that you got to create an environment that is not antagonistic. So many times, we want to go into these different types of, meetings or scenarios and be antagonistic with the group and basically mark our territory. Hey, I'm a strength coach. I know strength better than you. And, listen to me because I have all this education, and we do the same thing and they do the same thing in terms of, I know football. I've trained football players my whole life, and I know what works for football. And the best thing to do is go in early on and in whatever situation you are, and try to create this sense of community amongst the staff. If you go in and say, "Hey, look, my job is to be a servant leader, to bring you the best athletes that I can possibly bring, most prepared athletes." And to give them some input into the process, I think that's important. I mean, if you give up, add a little dessert in, I call it dessert, where maybe you throw in, them catching tennis balls at the end of their workout, or, for hand-eye coordination, or, maybe striking a sled, for offensive linemen, or doing pull-ups or something with towels for defensive linemen. A lot of times, that little bit will get you a lot when it comes to coaches letting you run the program and have complete say into it. And so rather than fight them on it, try to understand where they're coming from. When they do have suggestions, a lot of times, especially the young strength coach, they've seen it a lot of different ways. They've been athletes themselves. A lot of them go on to play high level ball, and that's why they got into coaching. And so, just allowing them to give you a little bit of input isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, and sometimes maybe just even trying what they have, as long as it's fundamentally sound or it's not going to injure the athlete. Sometimes you it is good to go ahead and try to incorporate some of the things in. That said, you also want to respectfully let them know that that's your role, just like it's their role. So when there are those times where boundaries start to get crossed, just say, "Hey, look, man, I respect you. I respect the job you do. I'm not out here, telling you how to coach quarterbacks or running backs. And I'd appreciate it if you did the same with me." And ultimately, we all want to win ball games, and I as a strength coach want to win them every bit as much as you. And so we're going to do the best thing to do to prepare the athletes. And as long as you got a head coach that supports you, ultimately it's your job, your role, and they have to understand that. But if you make it antagonistic, then you're not in every meeting, and you're not up in the football offices or the sport offices all the time. And so, you don't know what's being said. So I think having a good rapport with all the coaches, making them feel like they have input, regularly going and checking in on them. I always made it a point to go up to the football office and just sit down really quick, 2 or 3 minutes with each coach, and just see what's going on, talk about their guys. and you know, and see where you can be a resource and a benefit to them. And if you're constantly doing that, you know, then I think you're going to have a great relationship, and hopefully they're doing the same. Hopefully they're constantly coming down and checking on their guys and seeing how they can be a resource to you. So be communal, try not to be antagonistic. Javier asks, do you train skill players separately from the team? You know, how big do your groups get? And then ultimately, do the skill players lift heavy? Absolutely. You know, the principles for strength and conditioning don't change. Whether or not you're an offensive lineman, defensive lineman, that bicep is going to be the same physiological principles on a skill athlete as it is on a lineman or something along those lines. The amount of weight is what changes. That's where it becomes specific to the athlete. All of our athletes want to be big, fast, and strong. You know, you want your offensive lineman to be as fast as he can possibly be. You want your defensive back to be as strong as he can possibly be. And so creating a base program for everybody is important, and pushing them to be their max, their genetic ceiling in each of those areas. We should always strive for that. On top of that, then you know, you make things specific in terms of joint actions, and in terms of common injured areas and positional demands. You know, and that's an addition to. We call those blitz packages. Stole that from Joe Ken. You know, Wednesday, Saturdays, having them come in and work on things that are specific to them and their position. But we're always going to have our athletes train as heavy as they can go and push themselves to their genetic ceiling. You know, we do keep skilled athletes with the team. I typically, I take that back. It's either I'm going to train the team offense, defense, in which we're going to have, you know, what we call the bigs, the big skill and the skill, or we have a skill 7-on-7 and non-7-on-7, in which 7-on-7 athletes, you know, obviously we're training them together because we want them to be able to go out and do 7-on-7 at the same time, and logistically that works better. And so I wouldn't divide them based off of what they're doing in the weight room, but I would divide them based off of scheduling and logistical concerns and things like that. So that's the only reason we would divide them up. But I like the team lifting together. I like the team training, the offense training with each other, because those are the guys that they're going to have to go out there and go to war with. So I would definitely try to keep them together as much as you can. Lastly here, Andrew asks, he has a successful business. He wants to elevate to the next level. He wants to, you know, should I look for a mentor or try to break into coaching in the collegiate level? I had come to one of our conferences and basically just said, you know, what can I do to become one of these coaches that speaks regularly at conferences, that is considered an industry expert and those types of things. And so you got to start by, you know, branding yourself a little bit. And what I mean by branding is niching down into an area that you can be an expert in. You know, maybe that's speed, maybe that's strength, maybe that's kettlebells, maybe that's, you know, technology or something along those lines. And so become an expert in some area, and that gives you the ability to start to produce resources based off that. You know, I'd start with a blog, you know, just chronicling or journaling your experiences, you know, and, you know, by doing that, you're going to create a little bit of a following of people that are interested in what you have to say. You know, and so, you know, you just have to be a little bit more educated than the next guy to be able to provide a resource to somebody. And by creating that blog or that video blog and showing different things in that area, you can start to be a trusted resource for somebody, for them to know, like, and trust you to go back to you for information. When you do that, then obviously you can create some speaking engagements to where you can start to kind of put yourself out there. Just by niching down in one specific area doesn't mean that you abandon everything else. It just simply means that that's where you want to, you know, get to be known for, and then continue to expand your reach as you grow your personal brand. And then once you've spoken a few times, things like that, then I'd look to create resources, videos, books, that kind of stuff, you know. But it's a process. It's something, you know, I think that's where, you know, the internet gets a bad name for strength coaches, because, you know, they want to put the cart before the horse and put out a book or a video without having coached anybody, or without having done it at a high level, or really be an expert in a specific area. They live in generalities and can just kind of have the gift of gab. You know, that's not, you know, people see through that pretty quick. You know, and so I would really niche down, become an expert in a specific area, and then try to produce some resources for there. So, guys, I'm going to get back to the hike with James and the dogs here. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate the sponsors, and have a great week. Take care.